Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget the bug spray as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
Coming to you live from Monsteropolis, this is Monsteropolis, a show about, I think I said Monsteropolis.
Monsteropolis,
a show about anomalies, legends, and monsters. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove. I'm joined tonight by my pal, Mark Matzke, who doesn't like to say his own name.
Hi there. How are you,
Seth? Hey, I'm great, buddy. How are you? Haven't seen you in a long time. Definitely haven't been sitting here for 2 hours.
No.
So, Kickstarter, did it launch? This comes out Friday. I think it comes out. Okay, so the Kickstarter launched last night at 7 p.m.
Oh, cool.
So if you're listening to this, this came out. This is the official podcast of Small Town Monsters. And so it is therefore our sworn duty to talk in some respect about the Kickstarter, which is going to fund our next three films. It's weird because we're including On the Trail of Bigfoot in there, but all it's really doing for On the Trail of Bigfoot is funding post-production on the Trail of Bigfoot. Like, I feel like we're going to end up talking more about On the Trail of Bigfoot than the others, but the Kickstarter is primarily going to be about the others.
Right.
But I think we both had a stake or have some stake in On the Trail of Bigfoot, whereas you're not even going to get to be with us when we shoot Momo, at least principal photography. Mm-hmm. And you weren't with us for Terran's Guys, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So not to say that you're fired.
Yeah, right. That was the soft way of saying.
You weren't with us and you won't be.
You won't be.
No, but so the Kickstarter launched last night. If you're interested in Small Town Monsters, like what we do, please head over there and give the Kickstarter a backing. And if you're not into us, you probably aren't going to care about this episode, because I think we're primarily going to be talking about the three projects that we have involved in the Kickstarter, and maybe some of our experiences working on the Trail of Bigfoot and what we have coming up next.
I think it must be stated that included in the Kickstarter are Small Town Monsters hats, which we've heard about for years at this point, of being at events and sitting behind the table and being asked, do you guys have those hats still?
Yeah.
No.
It is strange. So that's always been the big one.
It's the return of the hat. So now's your chance if you're a haberdasher.
I'm going to have the least to say about Momo, because we aren't even. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Momo.
Yeah.
Which I don't even know how to go about.
Well, you've been talking about Momo for a long time.
I've been talking about Momo since Minerva Monster.
Right. Yeah. So maybe start there.
And even, I mean, it's the story I've most wanted to cover since we did Minerva Monster. Partially because I'm a monster geek and I have always adored the design, quote unquote design, of Momo the Missouri Monster. So I always wanted to tell a story that involved that monster. Which brings us to a point that could be a bone of contention for some people who've been with STM from the beginning, and that's Momo the Missouri Monster is not going to be a typical Small Town Monsters film, in that it's much more of a narrative horror film than it is a documentary. And when I say that, I mean like half of it's going to be documentary and half of it's going to be a narrative film with actors and the whole nine yards. For the first time, we're bringing in actors and there's going to be a monster running around. And we've done some of that, but it's never been to this extent. And we're definitely pulling from The Legend of Boggy Creek pretty heavily for inspiration. But the reason we chose that storytelling device, it's not because we don't want to do a documentary about Momo the Missouri Monster. It's that the documentary we should make about Momo the Missouri Monster should have been made 15, 20 years ago when some of the people were still around that would have been willing to talk about it. But also, Lyle Blackburn is putting out a book, and I can tell you I'm working my way through the book, and it's a really good book. But Lyle kind of breaks some information about that case that I can't go into here that might help explain why we are doing what we're going to be doing with this particular film. So we've been asked already, like, is this a found footage movie? It's not a found footage movie in any way. It is what happens when we take our typical like horror or our typical documentary style. So like Bray Road or Terror in the Skies, especially, and we merge it with the very like stylized type of storytelling we did with something like Flatwoods Monster. So we are mixing our typical documentary with a stylized 1970s inspired like drive-in horror movie.
What will the launch sequence be? I mean, with his book and the film, will they be tied close together?
His comes out in spring, and ours should be. I think his will be out actually closer to Terror in the Skies.
Okay,
but I mean, the thing about this year that's different from last year, it's actually more in line with what we did the year that Mothman and Invasion came out. Mm-hmm. There's only like a 3 or 4 month break between STM movies, so you've got On the Trail of Bigfoot comes out in March, at the very end of March, and then you've got Terror in the Skies coming out in what looks like late May is what I keep saying, but I haven't definitively put a date on it. Mm-hmm. But it could be early June, which Mothman of Point Pleasant came out on June 3rd. So it wouldn't be. And it's also kind of fitting because I've been saying this, like Terror in the Skies is very much like a spiritual sequel, in more ways than people probably realize. I think once they see the movie, a lot of things are going to, or actually when they see the first trailer, which will be coming out pretty soon, we're doing something different with the teaser, but it probably is immediately going to put people in the mindset of, oh, this is similar to what they did with Mothman Point mm-hmm. Pleasant. So what was the question? Oh, that's the sequence. Yeah. And then Momo comes out in, either very late September or very early October.
Okay.
And something else to keep in mind is like we're an independent production company, so like everything is predicated on how each project does financially for us to be able to finance the next one, regardless of how the Kickstarter does. If On the Trail of Bigfoot does well, there is going to be more On the Trail of coming, and we already have the plans in place to start on it, but nothing will start until we know how it's doing. So we might be in a position, because we're going to start filming two movies this year still, in addition to Momo. So technically three movies still need to be filmed this year. But the plan is to actually be working on The Mothman Legacy and The Bell Witch by next October. So we might be in a situation where we're filming Momo, editing Momo, putting Momo out, going right into shooting The Mothman Legacy, and then we'll be going to Tennessee to shoot The Bell Witch. So it's a very busy sort of year for us. But anyway, as far as Momo goes, we are not in a situation yet where I can say too much about it because it hasn't been, it's in pre-production and I have a story outline I put together. But think Legend of Boggy Creek, the way it blended narrative filmmaking with documentary, but something different, something a little different. I've got ideas. We're gonna do something different. Lyle's gonna be on camera, Peter Graves style, talking directly to the camera.
Now, you alluded to this before, but in the Momo case, there's not really people to talk to at this point?
I mean, this is what I've been told by Lyle, and I haven't done much digging myself yet, but I, considering who Lyle is, I tend to trust his judgment on that fact. There is one person who we're definitely going to get that or try to get that was tied to that original case. And then everything else would be ancillary investigators or locals. So that is a drawback for me. Like, I've been pretty vocal or upfront about the fact that I wasn't thrilled with the fact that we didn't get any of the original witnesses in the Bray Road Beast. Like, it's a reason we might need to go back to that movie at some point and do a sequel. But I'm to the point where, like, if we can't get original witnesses anymore, we need to come up with something else to do. Mm-hmm. We're not gonna just forge ahead and make a documentary with, like,
tell a story about a story.
Yeah, I just am not interested in that. Mm-hmm. So, plus, this gives us a new storytelling device. It gives us, like, a new way of telling stories, and SDM is going to be dipping its toe into narrative film over the next few years. This is a way for us to start to open that door. And when we announce the narrative film we do plan on making, it'll make sense. Like, people will be like, oh yeah, that's a natural progression from there to here.
All right. Should we walk backwards, go to Terror?
Yeah.
Sky?
Yeah.
Unless there's any other Momo stuff you want
to. No, that was it. Like, we just don't. If you're an actor and you're in Northeast Ohio and you're interested in being in a movie, you can contact us through the website, and we will keep your info in mind, because we are going to be casting for Momo. Terror in the Skies. So this year is apparently, like, the year of personal projects, because I did, On the Trail of Bigfoot is by far the most personal thing I've ever done. I'm in it. I'm narrating it from a personal standpoint. The whole thing's extremely personal. You've seen every episode. Terror in the Skies is very personal, weirdly enough. Like, I never would have, when I first came to the idea of doing that as our next movie, I never would have thought that. But the Bray Road Beast is, like, the most horror movie we've made. It feels very terrifying and scary and everything. And Terror in the Skies is probably going to be the least horror that we've done, which is funny because it's called Terror in the Skies. But it's much more of, like, a adventure / mystery than horror. And Spielberg and David Lean are, like, two of my top five, probably in my top three filmmakers of all time. And I wanted to make, like, a very Midwest, mm-hmm. like, we were talking about Close Encounters of the Third Kind in the last episode. I wanted to make a very, like, Midwest movie. And so, like, Terror is that.
Right.
And a lot of that is because we went to Illinois and we were there. And that's what you think of when you're there. It's like every typical Midwest movie you've ever seen.
Right.
Like, is encapsulated in that one place. Like, where we stayed in Jerseyville, and the movie opens with a narrative scene, by the way. I mean, technically, Terror in the Skies is us dipping our toe into the narrative film world, because it opens with a scene that's fictional. But we stayed in a place called Jerseyville, which is, like, it's like Elkhorn, but smaller. Like, the population is so tiny, but it's like this one stretch of road. And there's some buildings lining both sides, and that's their downtown. And we stayed in one of those buildings with windows overlooking that main street right downtown. So, like, we were in it's an old brick building. They had pictures of what the place looked like before they'd renovated it. And it was this, like, run down old, like, warehouse that had been downtown, probably some sort of, like, grain storage or something like that. Like, right behind us was a huge, one of those big, grain elevators, and, like, it was the most Midwest place we could have possibly stayed. We were above a bar, and our first night there, we ate in the bar, and they insisted on, like, taking our picture because they thought we were, like, a legitimate film crew or something. And so, like, it was just
framed now.
Yeah. No, I don't even think they ever posted. They kept saying they were going to post it on Facebook, but I don't think they understood who we were. So when they realized we were just, like, an indie film crew, they were Anyway, the movie, like the movie is about three towns. It's not about one small town. It's about Alton. Starts in Alton, and Alton is our the movie I keep coming back to is Invasion on Chestnut Ridge, where we jumped around. This is similar to that, but not structurally, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
It opens with Alton. It'll end with Alton. In the middle, we come to Lawndale, and we come to Chicago. And we learn about the Alton, Illinois Thunderbird sightings. You learn about the Lawndale incident, which is like a famous Thunderbird case, and the Chicago Mothman. And I say Thunderbird is like this all encapsulating word right now, but I need to get out of that because I think people have the idea that this movie is solely about Thunderbirds, and it isn't. It's about like all winged cryptids that have been seen in the state. Like, we interviewed two witnesses. One of them saw what he described as something that was like prehistoric. Like, it had the horn off the back of its head and the whole nine yards. And the other one is more of like a, almost like a winged, almost like a Mothman. Like, that's Jeff Byers' encounter. It was like weirdly sounds similar to the Mothman. Mm. So, it's much more of a mystery film with a little bit of wonder. Like, I couldn't get into the idea that we were going to make a movie that was like Bray Road Beast out of giant birds. Like, there's nothing terrifying about giant birds.
And you've got some interesting contrast there just in terms of the size of the locations, right? I mean, Lawndale is like smallest.
Lawndale's like
possible place, and then
Chicago's the biggest, but Lawndale was really interesting for me because we pulled into there on our way out. So we drove to Lawndale to shoot our B-roll there on the day we were heading home, and then we went from Lawndale up to Kankakee, which is right below Chicago, and interviewed a witness. So our final day of shooting on that movie was a lot of driving too, because then we had to drive all the way home from Chicago. But Lawndale sits, it's off of a highway, but not off of a highway. Like, there's no exit to get to Lawndale. So it's like you can see it driving by, but you can't get to it.
Wow.
And so we pulled into Lawndale. You drive over these railroad tracks, and there's like one road that runs down, and it's a neighborhood. It's not like, there's no town that you can see. There's no, the only thing that's there, there's a trailer. As soon as you turn into town, there's a trailer that has their post office, like a mobile home that has mm-hmm. their post office in it. And then next to that is a building with a bar in it. And then everything else is houses. And it's just a really nice, like, it's a nice little, but it's not a town. Like, you wouldn't call it a town.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy came like rolling up on a scooter as soon as we got in there. And I thought he was going to tell us to get out of there or whatever. So it turned out to be like a very nice guy. But I talked to him about like the history of Lawndale, and it was fascinating. Like, apparently at one point, like that town, because it's right outside of Lincoln, Illinois, which is, as far as I know, that's like birthplace to Abraham Lincoln, or home, some sort of home to Abraham Lincoln. So Lawndale at one time was like a very successful suburb of that town.
Hmm.
And they had four gas stations and five grocery stores. They had a huge dance hall, and he said people would come from all over the state like to this dance hall.
Hmm.
And today there's nothing. There's
none of that
nothing.
Exists.
Huh? No. And there's one grain elevator where everyone works in town, and it's going out of business next year. They're shutting it down next year. So, you know, like STM, when it started, I grew up in a small town, and this all started out of my kind of like adoration for small towns. I live in a small town. But I love like small town life. And I love the idea of like these places like that, where they have these stories that are like larger than the life is there. That sounds a little insulting. It's not supposed to be, but like they have these almost like mythical
right.
creatures that are said to reside in these mm-hmm. areas. And Lawndale is like the perfect encapsulation of that, because you go there today and there's no one, there's nothing there that says, I can look, by the way, from their post office in the trailer park or in the trailer and see the house where, I just blanked
Marlin.
Where Marlin Marlon Lowe was picked up. I mean, I can see it from right there. Mm-hmm. And that guy, you know, the guy on the scooter had his stories about Marlon and all that stuff. But it was like going there made me, it cemented for me like what I wanted that movie, what I want that movie to be, mm-hmm. like how I want it to feel. Like a little bit of sadness. Cause this is a, like the other thing that people might not realize is like in 20 years, Lawndale might not be there. It's like once, you know, like once all the jobs go out, like that town's going to shrink, you know? So like things like this are almost like you're documenting the town as it stands today. Mm-hmm. But anyway, like, and then Alton is such an interesting place. Everyone knows about Chicago, and the Chicago Mothman portion of the film is going more than anything. It's going to be used as like just to help sort of cement for people that this is something that has always gone on in Illinois. Like there are stories of like large winged cryptids that go back to the time of Lewis and Clark. Like that's something. And Alton is where we start because of the fact that they had the Piazza bird legend, which we talked about on the show already. And then there's also the fact that like all these eagles nest in Alton during the winter. And it's like very strange that they sit on the banks of the Mississippi River, but more than anything, they're known for birds, and that they've had multiple huge bird flaps take place there over the years. Like in the 40s, they had this giant Thunderbird flap and stuff like that. So I feel like I'm the only one talking. You want to talk about, well, anyway, it's going to be a right. great movie,
right? No, I mean, that's the idea, is just to give a little bit of more insight into what's coming.
Well, and can we talk about On the Trail of Bigfoot? Because you've seen it. So like, yes. I wanted to talk to you about I'm going to ask you like what you think of it. Cause you can technically call it a review, but it's not really cause you're in it. So like you're in it. What was your experience of being a part of it? Like, cause I don't know that originally we ever really discussed you being too intricately, and originally I'd asked you to co-write it with me before I realized it was going to be like
co-write and narrate the original.
I love lying to you. It's my favorite. It's my favorite thing,
but which I was excited about. But then as you got talking and developing the idea, and I think this was driving up Mount St. Helens, as a matter of fact, sort of hitting on the idea of this being a very personal project, to the degree that you would actually be the voice of the film. I mean, it would really be, instead of kind of in the very original stages, it being a history and then the present day, just presenting that in sort of a PBS style. This was your journey.
Well, and you've seen that.
Yeah.
You've seen that version of it.
Right.
Because like...
Right.
Yeah, keep going.
So, I mean, that was kind of cool to just be there to see that develop. As far as me being in it, I never really thought I would be on that end of the camera for any of these projects. It just didn't enter my mind. And so I guess the sensation of seeing myself on camera and then Lauren Coleman comes next...
And you're literally the first person introduced in the series as a talking head.
I'm not sure what to do with that.
But it makes like the reason I did that too is because it makes sense. Because like if this is a personal story, I couldn't tell a personal story about the Bigfoot subject from my perspective without somehow involving Sasquatch and mm-hmm. our time, because I think most of my major Bigfoot moments somehow involve you because of Sasquatch and then making Boggy Creek Monster together.
Right.
You were around for Minerva. You were around for Beast of Whitehall even. Like mm-hmm. you weren't there, but like you were around for all those. So like it made perfect sense to have you in it. It made perfect sense to have Shannon in it. Shannon LeGros, and it made perfect sense to have Adam in it because of what we experienced together.
Right.
So people, I think that is something I've thought about, is like, I wonder how people are going to respond to the fact that three very good friends of mine are in it. But at the same time, like it is a personal story, they're a part of my story mm-hmm. or like the way that played out.
Yeah. And I mean, that's something that I've thought about and written about too, and this, the unique opportunities that Sasquatch and Small Town Monsters has created for me, for both of us, really. And, you know, it's gotten us to Fowlk, Arkansas, and Ape Canyon, you know, and these iconic places that otherwise would have just remained a story in a book. I mean, it's gotten us to those locations. And I found, for me, and I know for you, how insightful that is to actually be there, as opposed to just imagining or taking somebody else's word for it. And there's no substitute for, you know, be standing next to a bayou down in Fowlk, or, you know, standing at the trailhead of the Ape Canyon Trail and just knowing this is where that took place. It's, and looking around and seeing, yeah, there's sufficient cover and resources here that if there is something large and unusual, it could definitely be here. So I'm grateful for that experience.
When we first started STM, we had no budget, and we didn't have and Boggy Creek Monster, we didn't have money. We Boggy Creek Monster cost less than anything we've done since. So like any movie we've made since Boggy Creek Monster cost more than Boggy Creek Monster, but it was a massive crew compared to anything we've made since. Our typical crew is like four to six tops. And Boggy, there was like 12 people walking around, and the travel costs alone and all that stuff. But our thing on that, I remember Lyle kept saying in interviews that like what STM does well is it like takes you to these places you might never get to. And I think that's like part of what people will like about On the Trail of is that it is a visual, like I think it is a visual like experience. And I'm not saying my cinematography is particularly good, because there are parts in that where people are going to be like, what the heck is happening here? But it's also not meant to be like our movies. And that's something I've had to, like, you're almost trying to educate the audience ahead of time on what they're going to get when they see it, because it's not Bray Road Beast, and mm-hmm. It's not even like The Mothman in Point Pleasant. Those movies are very specifically designed to look cinematic and have like a cinema. It's supposed to be like a cinematic experience. That's, you know, a documentary. And On the Trail of Bigfoot is like a new shooter. It's like when you, it's a verite. They call it verite, but it's like a verite style. And so there's a lot of handheld stuff. There's a lot of, and hopefully we've overcome some of the things that hampered us very early on with like Minerva Monster and Beast of Whitehall, when that's how all of our stuff was. Like, I think the sound quality is considerably better and the picture is better, but it is still like, we were boots on the ground, like trying to shoot this in the moment. And so you have things and obstacles come up, you know, that, you know, might make people wonder, you know, if we actually knew what we were doing at the time, which we didn't. We never do. I never.
Yeah.
So we talked about, you've seen every episode as I've cut them, and we mentioned it, but like there was a very early cut of episode one that did not include me on camera. And I don't know was it narrated from I guess it was early on, right? Narrated
yeah.
from my perspective.
Yes. But, okay. But still very much more, I guess, objective. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was you, but it was presenting, here's the history of wild men and, you know, that type of thing.
And that changed because of you. I don't know if I've said this to you, but yeah, I think I have. But like, you sent me a text that said, and I can read you through text, you never say anything mean or even approaching critical, but you will say things, and if there's not the right level of enthusiasm or something, I know what's going on. And your response was like, the line you used was it's a thinking. How did you put it? It's a thinking. Oh, it hits yeah. the ground. You said it hits the ground thinking instead of running. And maybe that's a good thing or something. And I was like, oh,
yeah.
I was like, I better start examining this. So I like peeled that episode apart like an mm-hmm. onion. Like, I ended up pulling the entire thing back apart. You and I went and shot the intro together. So it actually, not only does it open with you as like one of the talking heads, but the show actually opens with Mark and I talking, in a place that's personally important to me in terms of like my interest in the subject. And then from there, that like kind of informed me of how I was going to edit the entire show. Mm-hmm. The unfortunate thing about that is like there's like the fifth episode where I was in X and I was alone. So I was in there with Adam, but Adam's not a cameraman and I didn't really realize I needed people to be filming me. So I'm not in episode 5. Mm-hmm. I still feel like that's a very, I might be giving too much away, huh? Probably shouldn't. Episode 5, hang in there. It's a good one.
It is a good one. And you're there, you're just not on screen.
Yeah, you hear me a lot.
Yeah, you're identified as being there. Mm-hmm. You don't have to just take your word for it.
Yeah.
But still, I, you know, having reviewed the episodes back to back to back, that was the one thing that did stand out, is that visually, you just never...
I'm
observed.
Never in that episode. And
it really hits you until after you've seen it. I think it's like, oh,
I almost like that about the episode, because it's so specifically about those four people and that group and that place, that to me it almost works. Not, or I think it does work, not having me in in that episode. But overall, like, give me some sort of like rundown of, you know, like your thoughts on the series.
On the series, I think, it's hard to remove myself from reviewing a STM project, but I think what it is successful at doing is talking about Bigfoot with all of the appropriate ambiguity. There's so many projects. I know as soon as you start talking about other projects, people like get out their spears and want to attack you. But there's so many projects that go into it and they have a clear set of biases and
like
agenda.
Agenda, yeah.
And they're just, it's there to try to convince you that this is the right way to think about the subject. And the thing that I really appreciate and admire about On the Trail of Bigfoot is that it never does that. I mean, it seems to me to go to great pains to not do that and to just say, here's my personal journey, here's the history of the subject, here are the important places and people to talk to about it, and, you know, make up your own mind, which to me is just the right note to hit.
Well, I think it's a visual, in a lot of ways, it's kind of like a visual Sasquatch. Like it, you know, like I do think I haven't even finished editing it yet. I'm on the last episode, but like I recorded all narration today, but I do think when it's all done, I'll look back on it and this might be the one or one of the STM projects that I can like look back on and be proud of. I get that impression anyway now. Not that I hate our other movie for listeners, like not that I hate our other stuff or whatever, but I have a habit of like, I'm the guy that helped create them. So I have a very hard time not picking them apart when I watch them. And this is the one where I think I might be able to go back to it and be like, okay, we did every, I do think even now I can look at it and say I did every single thing that I intended on doing when we started making it. Like, could I have used like 2 or 3 extra episodes? Yes, because I would have really enjoyed, like, there are a lot of, we can easily do On the Trail of Sasquatch or On the Trail of Bigfoot too, like easily. But even, you know, like at the same time, maybe the 6 episodes is the way to go and see, you know, see how everyone feels about it when it's out there.
Yeah, another way that it's like Sasquatch, I think, is that this is a project that you could show someone with no idea, you know, with no Bigfoot background.
I think it's going to be better for those people.
Yeah, exactly. And that would be, I can't think of a better introduction, really, to the subject, because it's not trying to sell you on a certain viewpoint. It's just taking you through the history and what's going on today in a way that is intellectually responsible, you know, and visually really amazing to look at.
The I don't even know where I was going to go. I'm excited for it to come out, mostly because I want to talk about it more with people, because mm-hmm. I'm trying not to talk about like the experiences we had in the field with different people. And there's two episodes in particular where we had things happen that might have been Bigfoot related that I'm curious to talk to other people about or learn about, you know, what other people think of them. Like the X episode 5 is a big one. And then episode 6, when we went out with the Night Stalkers, we, you know, there was some interesting stuff that happened. Nothing that, I'm excited to hear too, what like listeners think of these when they come out. This is the Kickstarter's live. So if you're listening to this and you're interested, in STM stuff, head over there and back the Kickstarter. And like Mark said, there's all kinds of cool stuff. It's not like you're, I bristle at donate, the word donate, because it's like there's a ton of stuff it reward wise in this campaign. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in what we're talking about, go over there and back. If not, we're going to be back next week with another Monsteropolis. That's just two men yammering at each other for a couple hours.
It's an epic.
Epic. An epic hour discussion. Episode.
Mongolian Death Worm.
Yeah.
Part 2.
Final thoughts on the Kickstarter.
It's, I mean, what number Kickstarter is this? Is this 4?
This is 5.
5. And yeah, it, you know, I think the thing that is so rewarding is rewarding about this is seeing, as years go by, there are names that keep popping up in the lists of people who have backed the projects, and there's something to be said for that, I think, in terms of support and building an audience. I think that's really cool, and new people have come on board with each project. Obviously, it's gotten bigger each time. But it's pretty satisfying to know that STM continues to build an audience around, you know, projects where we've got where you've been able to tell stories the way you want to tell them, and nobody else is driving the boat. That's pretty cool.
I don't let them.
You don't. I know.
Where's the clicker at? Oh, right. Oh, I'm still recording.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com. It is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.